And welcome once again, folks, to All Things Trek here on TrekRadio.net. I'm Bob.
And I'm Oren.
So I haven't been here for like a couple weeks now.
No, you haven't. But I do have a very important announcement to make. First, you'll notice this is another pre-recorded show, which just happened to turn out this way because of time constraints. But we do have, as promised, a very important guest on the show, Mr. Chuck Soddenberg, otherwise known as SF Debris.
Yay!
Greetings.
All right. So this is something that I have been bragging about for a while, because anyone who's listened to this show definitely knows that my views of Star Trek have been very much influenced by the opinionated episode guides, both Voyager, Enterprise, and even TNG to an extent. Because I started watching, I think you just put out Parallax, and my friend introduced me to it, and I was like, this is exactly what I want in a Star Trek review show.
That's true. Whenever I go over to his apartment, he's like, Bob, have you seen the latest SF Debris? I'm like, no, and then we proceed to watch it every time. Every time, it's a thing that happens.
And, I mean, just for a long time, I'd known that I didn't terribly care for Voyager or Enterprise, but I was sometimes hard-pressed to explain why. And it was really refreshing to, you know, to have it put into words. It's like, yes, Janeway is incredibly inconsistent as a captain, and like Archer's just kind of crazy. It kind of crystallized for me when I started watching your reviews.
Well, that was kind of the whole point of it, was to encourage people to look at the stuff and really think about it,
mm-hmm.
because if you can, I don't necessarily think dissect it, perhaps, but to just say, well, what do I like about this and what don't I? And break it down and see, you know, it's certainly not a sum of its parts sort of thing, but if you think more about it, you can perhaps better assess what your tastes are and where the show might be deviating from those tastes, to both improve your own enjoyment of things and also if you get into the creative side, which I found a lot of people who leave me feedback are saying, you know, hey, I've been thinking about how to do my fanfic, how to do my novel or something, and thinking about those elements to it. Basically, like I keep saying, pro-think is the kind of the approach I want to take with this thing here. We can have fun with it, definitely, but at the end of the day, the more important thing is if you walk away smarter or more insightful because of what you have thought about it.
Yeah, which
you're totally an unpaid consultant. My goodness, that's what you are. You're an unpaid consultant. I've got a feel for you. Well, not quite unpaid because you take donations on your website, right?
Yes, to support all of the web-based stuff. You know, we're working on a transition to a new website, getting upgraded computer components, software, buying DVDs for all this. That's mostly what the donations support.
So is it a team of people?
I'm sorry, what?
Is it a team of people then, not just you?
No, I'm. It is just me. I just.
Okay.
It sounds more official if I refer to myself in a plural sort of thing. The massive SF Debris conglomerate here.
The royal we, as it were.
Consisting of me and this sock puppet.
So I guess I'm going to jump right into the questions I had about the opinionated guides. And the first is like, what made you decide to start doing them, just straight up?
Actually, it's kind of embarrassing. I started out because I needed to practice web design.
Fair enough.
This was back in about 98 or so, and you know, everybody was doing it all in like Notepad or something, and you had to code
stuff
like that. So it was just I can't just make a web page of nothing. So I said, okay. My friend said, you know, the stuff that we talk about when we're watching Voyager and stuff is funny, and we ought to put that on the net somewhere. And so that just, you know, it was basically something to do with it. And then it bloomed from there.
And so was it originally like just text-based, and then you went into videos later?
Yeah. We tried to, and this time I'm in we with me and my friend who talked about that. We tried doing video back in 2000, but there just wasn't a way to do it at that time within our constraints, because there wasn't like no YouTube or anything like that. It would have been, you know, hosting these massive files on your own website, which you know, at that time, if you had 50 megabytes, it was huge, kind of thing. So it just, it proved impractical. So we just stuck with the text, text stuff at that time. It wasn't until, about, it was 2008 when I realized, you know, all these guys are doing it on there now. And I always kind of wanted it to do it that way because, I think that the spoken word does make it a little bit easier. The written word definitely has its advantages, but from a performance standpoint, it's a little bit easier. Plus, people can put it on there and multitask. You know, they can listen to me and do something else at the same time. Whereas if they're reading, they have to just sit and stare at the same thing the whole time, and you have to do more to maintain interest that way.
I will say, however, that Oren has your undivided attention all the time when he watches your stuff. So no, don't worry there. He is there and digesting all the information you put out there in every video you've got.
And for whatever it's worth, I do also really like the text reviews because, like, you know, with your video reviews, they're awesome. Obviously, I watch every one of them that you put out, but there is a time constraint. Whereas I've noticed that when I read the text interview, like the text reviews, and then compare them to the video reviews. On the text one, sometimes you just have a little more time to go into a point more in depth. So don't give up on the text if you ever, you know, find yourself with, like, you know, 5 free hours, because I'm sure we all have so much time. you can go ahead and do more text reviews, because I love reading those.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be working towards that when I have some time, probably about 5 minutes before the Earth smashes into the sun. That's but
fair. Well, first we're going to be killed by solar flares.
That's true. Get an umbrella. That'll protect you.
Yay! SPF 500.
For like the one person we have who listens to the show who hasn't seen SF Debris, that was a reference to his Up the Long Ladder review, which is just a weird episode in general. I have a more specific question. Were you worried about people just starting to hate you because you were, you know, saying some negative things about certain aspects of Star Trek?
No, not really.
Fair enough.
I had more of an attitude back then. I've kind of mellowed over time there.
You've lost your edge. Come on, Rock, get back in the fight.
Well, it's kind of a, you know, back when the net was newer like that, you know, we all kind of charged on there and we all reveled in all these new opportunities to, like, basically get on a street corner and shout whatever you thought to people and fight every battle. And now, you know, it's been like 15 years for a lot of people being on the net, and you realize, you know, just because I don't agree with that guy doesn't mean I need to waste 20 hours of my life arguing with him, because he's probably going to be just as dumb when I'm done talking to him as he is right now. So why bother? You know, if I can have an intelligent conversation with somebody else, why deal with all that hassle? So, you know, I think that the net has in some ways matured, and I think that it was necessary to mature along with that. Plus, the way the world seems to be going kind of the opposite direction is a sort of we all kind of have a responsibility to, you know, be part of the solution as far as this discourse, instead of being so entrenched in our viewpoints, being more open to at least discussing it or at least tolerating differences of opinion that are not evil, I guess I would say. I mean, you certainly have to draw lines at some point, but basically it's like there's a human need to divide ourselves at some point where we have to turn on each other for some reason. I don't mean necessarily violence, but like we have to argue with each other for nothing. I mean, if you, for instance, had like a website dedicated to black redheads locked in pillories being spanked by men in animal costumes,
right,
there would almost certainly be serious arguments over the kind of costume there should be. Well, that's just the way we are.
It's really important because the latex is, you know, it catches the light, but it's probably going to chafe a little bit. So
look, man, those of you who like cats have no idea what the wolf is. It's the spirit. You know, but that's our, you know, our tendency, it seems, because that's the kind of thing that comes into a fandom. Like, you know, you keep breaking it down there. I prefer science fiction to romance or something. All right, so we're our group, but then we get into science fiction. You know, I like Star Trek more than Star Wars. Oh, we're divided against them. Then we get into Star Trek, and it's, oh, I like TNG more than Deep Space Nine.
What?
And then it's, you know, it keeps breaking down more and more so that you have the people who all like Data fighting amongst each other about which is his best episode, you know? That seems to be that tendency.
I think XKCD did a comic about that recently, where they were like, human subcultures are nested fractally. There is no bottom.
That is very smart.
Which I'm sure makes... I don't know enough math to understand exactly how that works, but I got what he was trying to say. So now that we've discussed, you know, now that we've gone through a little bit of highbrow discussion, do you remember when you got your first hate mail?
Yeah, that was probably within the first 2 weeks.
Oh, really?
First yeah. 2 weeks of your video reviews or having your reviews up like back in 98?
Back in 98, yep.
Gotcha.
Darn it. Took us like 3 months?
We try to be relevant, Orin. We've only just achieved that status recently.
Yeah, that's fair.
So what was the email about? What were they complaining about? Were they just refuting all your points? Were they saying that you're a schmuck, that you don't know anything? You know, what was the email? Do you recall?
That is exactly right. You have no idea what you're talking about. And that was pretty much it.
What was the review?
I don't even remember. It was one of the early ones. It wasn't Timeless. It was one of the ones I did after that, though. I did Timeless first. That's the only thing I remember for sure from those days.
Timeless. That's the Voyager episode where they have the ship in the ice. That's where Chakotay and Kim are going to go try to go back in time. The other episode.
Yeah, it was a real challenge because they had to try to make us involved in the two least interesting characters on Voyager. So.
But, you know, I will give them credit. Future Kim has, like, more character in, like, 10 minutes than regular Kim does in 7 years.
Exactly.
And although that episode was a little strange because we see, like, Captain Geordi, and it was like, this is just another – it's kind of weird because Star Trek has this idea that the natural career advancement for everyone is that they will eventually make captain. Like, you know, you even get, like, Crusher making captain
All Good Things.
Things.
Yeah, it's true that not everyone would pursue that course. But then again, people may have changing interests over time. They may have started out like her wanting to be in medicine but enjoying the – because I think they talked in season 7 or actually I think it might have been season 6 with her enjoying taking that shift every once in a while and having the command position that she may decide this is more the direction I want to go, whereas like Data – didn't pursue that path. He chose to go into academia.
Yeah, and they did lay the seeds for Crusher taking command fairly well, I thought, with Descent, when she actually was in charge and managed to do a pretty good job. Although I was a little confused why they left a blue shirt in charge of tactical instead of having her beam down, because all she would have been doing on the planet was like looking around with a tricorder, whereas if they, you know, just saved one of their tactical officers who knew how to fire the phasers.
Yeah, you know, when they say a skeleton crew, you usually assume it's a skeleton crew of people who would fit in that job best. You know, we're only facing against the most dire threat that the Federation has ever known. Maybe we should keep like a few of the A squad people up here on the ship, which is our only way out of here.
Well, hey, while we're actually on the topic of Descent, this is something I've wanted to ask you for a while. Do you think that in Descent they have like Hugh shows back up and he talks about how him being reassimilated into the collective caused all of these problems. Do you think that was supposed to be like the end of the Borg collective? Because that was kind of how I got interpreted it when I was watching the episode.
I think that might have been what was intended. I also think it might have just been an idea of the week that they were throwing out there to see how it played.
Mm-hmm.
I know it got played up in a TV guide at that time. That this was the Borg were going in this new direction, and they had a big story on that and everything. And ultimately, it seemed like it just kind of petered out. Because, like yeah. I said in the review of that, you know, in the end, the Borg were now no different than just about any other race that they went up against. They lost what made them unique.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't know, when I watched that, I actually saw Voyager before I saw Descent for some reason. And then, like, I went back and I watched Descent, and I was a little like, hey, wait a minute. What's going on here? all right, another technical question. how do you go about making an episode of your reviews?
Well, the first thing I do is I, with nothing else but what I might have assimilated naturally, no pun intended.
LOL.
I just sit down and I watch the episode, just a blank slate, to see what my initial thoughts are. Then I go and read what other people have written about. I don't mean other reviews. I mean like behind-the-scenes material, mm-hmm. Information that might be on the DVDs to try to get more of a picture of that. I look for possible connections with other episodes to see if there's more to it that might not necessarily be present on the first viewing. Then I watch it again to see if there's anything with that more informed opinion that's leaps out. And then finally I sit down and write a script while watching it.
So you do write a script. That was something I always wondered about, was if you just, you know, recorded freehand or freehand, that's the wrong term, but I think you know what I meant.
Right. I don't stick religiously to the script. It's there to help me make sure that I get all of my points across and try to get more complicated ideas out there without stopping to think about how best to say something. You know, I've already thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
On the point, actually, of your opinions and such and writing them out and, you know, what you think of different things, you know, what's your, like, schooling background? Do you have, like, a degree in, like, political science or something like that? Or, you know, what's are you just a self-educated gentleman?
Well, I studied education. I was a teacher for several years. At the moment, I know there seems to be kind of a debate on what I'm doing right now. I do substitute teaching at the moment, so I don't have a fixed classroom. So I go in from time to time here and there. But my background is in education. And so as a result, I'm used to having to plunge into a subject and learn about it and try to get beyond the whole Wikipedia mentality. You know, I read this page and now I know everything about this. You know,
citation needed. Do you ever use Star Trek in your class?
It's never come up.
No,
it's never been relevant.
That's fair.
Well, what grades are you teaching? Is it like, you know, kindergarten, preschool, you know, high school, college?
I've subbed everywhere from fifth grade up through eighth grade.
Gotcha.
Oh man, now I'm remembering how we used to treat our substitute teachers when I was in eighth grade. I apologize.
It's not that hard. It's just a matter of survival. You know, you go in there and all you got to do is just keep the kids from killing each other until the end of the day, and then you go home.
That sounds about right. That's what I remember from my days of fifth through eighth grade.
I recommend nets, heavy-duty nets.
Well, we're not going to get to the full dynamic systems today. Wow. Sounds like a problem for somebody else. Somebody will be here tomorrow.
I have another question about the reviews. When did you decide to branch out of Star Trek?
That was about the time I did the switch over to Blip. People have been asking for it for a long time, and the show needed more revenue in order to continue to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And so people have been asking for it, so I thought, okay, for a limited time, I'll just throw that out there and see what happened. And it so took off that it was like, there's no point in making this a limited time because, you know, I've got so many requests in here now. I can probably go for a year without having to have anybody more of them there. So
that
was the impetus, and it's taken off. So that's why I keep doing that.
I do have to admit that when Oren was talking about that you had done a My Little Pony review, I thought he was trolling me at first. I'm like, no, come on.
That's one of my favorites.
And then, then I sat down and watched it. I'm like, oh, okay, he did.
I was surprised to see that too.
Because that's how you get some of your requests, right, is that people can donate to your website and then they can say, hey, I'd like you to review this thing, and then you review it.
Yeah, I know it seems kind of, you know, a lot of people say, oh, people are paying you to review. That was never really the intent. The idea of it was that people, you know, it's a donation-supported website, and if people were willing to donate enough to really help support it, I'll do a special request for them. That was the way it was intended to be. Now it's kind of become a reverse where people think, oh, you have to do that in order for him to even consider it. And no, it's just a matter of time. I mean, I've got you know, if I cut off all donations today, I probably still would have enough material to fill out the rest of the year just with all those requests. So it's you know, there's just not enough time for everybody who says, hey, I would really like to see this. I understand, and I would love to talk about the shows that I love all day and to make fun of all the things that I think are silly all night, but there's just not enough time. I mean, even now, just doing two new shows and one repeat shows a week is really turning into a 7-day-a-week job now. And so that's a kind of a system where it's a way of thanking people who are helping me to be able to do this.
Right on.
Yeah, and DVDs ain't going to buy themselves either. I guess this is like a weird hardware question. Do you have like a big stack of external hard drives? Because I can't imagine that all these reviews don't take up a lot of space.
The reviews don't take up a lot of space. It's the episodes themselves. After a while, it became too impractical to have to rip it every single time I was going to do it. So I just transferred all of my Star Trek stuff, all of my Babylon 5 stuff, everything onto a bunch of 2-terabyte hard drives that I've just got stacked down here, and it makes that a lot easier. And also a lot easier to just sit down and watch quick.
2 terabytes, huh? That's pretty compressed, I think, for all that stuff.
Well, I got a stack of like 6 of them down here.
Okay, gotcha. That makes a little more sense now.
All right. Now I'm positive that more stuff will come to me as we go through the rest, but I have one more review related question before we get into the general Star Trek stuff. Is there any chance that you're going to do Legend of Korra?
A chance? Sure.
Well, now be careful here, Oren. You're talking to SF Debris. We all are familiar with SF Debris, especially when we're talking about probability versus possibility here. Now come on.
Yeah.
Rephrase your question.
I am a bastard.
And ask again. Try again, Oren.
I'm just lodging my vain hope that you will review Legend of Korra, because on the one hand, it's a show I really like. On the other hand, it definitely stumbled at the end, and I would love to hear your thoughts on it.
I'll give you 1,000 quatlus to review Legend of Korra.
A whole 1,000?
A whole 1,000 quatlus.
Will there be cabbages?
There will be. You could buy the cabbage with the quatlus.
Look, there's cabbage I think it was Cabbage Industries. I don't. All right. So I have some general Star Trek questions now. Like I said, I'm positive more like technical review related questions will come to me. But for now, I want to know, how did you get into Star Trek in the first place?
I watched the original show when I was a kid. I didn't like get into it then, but I developed a familiarity with it. Mm-hmm. I lived in like the boondocks for 2 years, and we only had 4 channels, and you can only watch The Boy Who Cried Werewolf so many times before you just can't handle that anymore. So I was familiar with TOS, but it was TNG, I think, that really drew me in. Obviously not the original seasons, but as it got further on, and I went back and reassessed it once it had stopped sucking, not to put too fine a point on it.
Yep.
that really drew me into the series and then into the franchise and renewed an interest in that.
Awesome. Do you have I'm guessing Deep Space Nine, but I'll ask you, which Star Trek show is your favorite?
I can't really say that I've got a favorite. I mean, I know it might seem that way, but
which one just pleases you the least? How about that?
It's the same approach I take to my children.
Excellent.
Which of you has disappointed me the least today? You will not be punished. I think the first 3 series all have areas where they excel in that so differentiate them from the others that it's just not quite a correct comparison. It's like, you know, do you like Porsches more than you like cookies, you know? Well, you know, in some senses, yes, but if I'm, you know, starving, then obviously a cookie is going to be better, you know. They're just different in the areas where they excel. Like Deep Space Nine is very good with their story arcs and with their willingness to explore aspects of their characters that they weren't willing to on the other shows, TNG seemed to really grasp the idea of finding the human element out in exploration. TOS brought excitement to the whole idea of exploration in space. You know, they may seem similar, but what really helped them was when they distinguished themselves from each other. TNG was at its worst when it tried to be like TOS. Once it stopped doing that, that's when the show really took off. Deep Space Nine worked because it never tried to be like TNG in the first place. It set about to be its own thing. And, you know, sure, they all have their mistakes, too. Deep Space Nine, you know, too easily fell into soap opera kind of things sometimes. So that's like a strike against it. TOS, it didn't really develop its lesser characters to the same degree as its main ones. And even those, it was mostly a how are they reacting to a crisis rather than to compare it to TNG's approach. You would sometimes see Picard just doing something completely unrelated to being a captain, and that would inform you about his character. Those are all, you know, advantages and disadvantages to their series. So I can't really say that anyone would be my favorite because they all have aspects that I find appealing.
That's fair. You mentioned, I thought this was an interesting point about, like, the character development of Picard on TNG. How do you feel about, like, how the development or lack thereof some of the other characters? Like, I always felt like Riker and Geordi didn't, and especially Worf, didn't quite get the attention they deserved.
Yeah, it's kind of a feedback problem you have there where you don't focus on their character, so they don't get the emotional grip on of the audience on them. And because the audience doesn't have that interest on them, there's no incentive to explore that. So as long as it maintains that, you're not going to get a change in that whole approach.
Mm-hmm.
If you could follow that twisted thing that I'm trying to say there. You know, it was that Data was being explored, Picard was being explored, that got people interested in those characters, so they did more stories about them, so you got more interested in them, and other characters just kind of played more supporting roles.
No, that's definitely true, especially in the later seasons when it's all about, you know, Data learning new things about humanity and Picard, you know, having a flute and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I have another specific question about TNG. How do you think the show like would have changed if at the end of season 3 in Best of Both Worlds if Picard had not come back?
Wow, that's a pretty big question.
Yeah, it is.
I think they probably would have worked a lot on that contrast between Shelby and Riker. I think that would have been a big part of it. My fear is it would have turned into a romantic sexual tension sort of thing, similar to what they wound up doing with later on, joking with Archer and T'Pol in that awful Enterprise episode.
Do not want but, to.
Yeah, I don't even want to say the name. But
so you think Elizabeth Dennehy would have stayed on the show?
I think that was the intent. I think that they wanted to have Shelby on there to step up and then like be a challenge to Riker. What I really liked about the character of Shelby was that her gender was not relevant to her character. By that I mean they didn't. Star Trek has a bit of a problem. I should say modern Star Trek has a problem with wanting to pair its female leads off with other actors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Shelby came in, it wasn't that she was interested in anybody. Her gender was not relevant to what she was doing. She was ambitious just because that was her character.
Right.
And it concerned me thinking about that they might try to go off in this different direction, which in essence, you know, basically says the role of women is to ultimately hook up with another man and is to hook up with a man. Instead of just saying, hey, you know, this is my career, this is what I want to do with my life, and everything else you know, is not important to me. If that's going to be like a Kirk where ultimately I'm going to wind up alone and maybe regretting it, so be it. But I want to, you know, achieve this, and I want to do this, and I want to be an admiral by whatever. And, you know, that's not a gender-specific thing. And, you know, I thought we saw that in Shelby's character, and that would be the way I would hope that she would go. But I have that little fear in the back of my mind that says, ah, they would try to pair her up with Riker at some point, or somebody else.
And then Troy would get jealous, and we'd have like a little triangle going on. That'd be terrible. But do you think that they would have been able to have a story of like Riker and Shelby butting heads? Because at that point, I think even though Roddenberry wasn't really, was he? I don't think he passed by then. Maybe he had. But even if he was still alive, he wasn't really involved with the storytelling or with the show specifically. But I think they were still sort of operating under his idea that there can't be conflict between the characters.
Yeah, that's true. Except that I think we were seeing it with Shelby already.
Mm-hmm.
That they would say, hey, look, this is what's working for this dynamic. Let's not shake that up anymore. You know, we lost a great and popular character here. We have something that's in place that's working. Let's not mess it up. And I think that, you know, Gene may have that opinion, but I think that he would have accepted in the end, okay, this is what's working. Let's not screw it up.
That, I guess, we're on this topic. That's something I've wanted to ask you, too. How do you, like, it's always confused me that, like, the original series has this big thing built up around the, you know, the conflict and the relationship of the three main characters, and then Next Generation comes around and Roddenberry says there are going to be no conflicts between the characters, even though that was, like, his big thing in TOS. What do you think led him to make that choice?
I think it was a kind of a the culture feeding back into itself. People said, "Hey, you've shown us a real optimistic view of the future," and I think Roddenberry was very much. I'm not trying to say this into a negative way, but mm-hmm. I think his self-image was very much tied into how much the fans liked him and liked his what he was doing with it. And so the things that they liked about it were the things that he really wanted to embrace and take credit for. And so when they would say, hey, you know, we love this utopia, he would feed back into that until, you know, 20 years later, he's got a different idea of what Star Trek is than the thing that attracted everybody's attention in the first place, because it has so distilled down that it's gone past the point where it's been the attractive thing in the first place. You've in essence dissected the cat and understood how it works, but you don't have a cat anymore.
No, I'm a poor cat.
I have the sickest analogies. I don't mean to.
That escalated quickly.
In the same vein, how do you think Next Generation would have been different if it had happened, say, 5 years after the end of TOS instead of 20?
Well, I think it would have. We saw what Phase 2 was, so I think it very much would have been like Phase 2. And
I actually have to admit, I know very little about Phase 2, except that a few of its episode concepts were like repurposed for TNG. You want to explain a little bit about that?
I'm not too familiar with it compared to a lot of people. I do know that a lot of what you saw in the motion picture was what Phase 2 would have been. Deckard, I think he might have had a different name, I don't remember. Mm-hmm. The Persis Kambada character. Spock would not have been in it.
From what I understand of the series of events is that Gene was trying to get Star Trek back on the air after the animated series, and it just kind of wasn't working out for him. And then Star Wars came out. And then Paramount's like, well, we should probably compete with this thing. You know, what do we have? And then that's when the motion picture came out. And they had reused and recycled a lot of the ideas and material that Gene had come up with for Phase 2 and just put into the motion picture. It was kind of a compromise. You know, Gene has wanted to get Star Trek back in some way, shape, or form into the media, and Paramount wanted to be able to compete on the same level against, you know, what Lucas had put out.
Yeah, it's kind of a convoluted thing, and there is a lot of inconsistencies, but I guess the idea is that Gene wanted to make a movie, then it was a series, and then it was back to the movie again once they were ready to do the series, so they adapted the series to the movie, and then Gene got kicked off the movies, so he wound up doing TNG, the series, from the notes that he had for Phase 2. And that's what kind of suggests to me that maybe we're better off, because basically the worst parts of what TNG was, I think, is what Phase 2 ultimately would have been.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, again, trying to be the original Star Trek, but it wasn't. And maybe it would have been different if we would have had the Kirk and Chekhov and Uhura and everyone like that. There, maybe that would have made a difference. But, you know, those TOS-like episodes of TNG just never worked out.
No, there's just even the visual aesthetic. I mean, I'm not an expert on what the general visual aesthetic of the late 80s and early 90s was, but when I watch the first and even some kind of second season episodes, I'm just like, this is the sort of thing that I forgive in the original series, because I know that they didn't have the money to do more, but, you know, TNG is like $1 million an episode. I know they can do better than this.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, we mentioned the topic of the movies, and I want to ask you about that, because I mean, personally, just your Wrath of Khan review, I think, is my favorite thing you've ever done, because it, you know, I've always loved Wrath of Khan, but your review, I think, enriches the experience. It's like, it shows, it's like, this part, the part that you really like, here's why you really like, or maybe not why you like it, but here's the things that went into making it. It's like, but is Wrath of Khan your favorite movie?
Yes.
How do you feel about the others?
Oh, definitely a lot of the other ones are great, too. Wrath of Khan is, you know, took a step beyond. It wasn't just great entertainment. It also, I talked about at the beginning of the month, this idea of work should aspire to either inform, inspire, or entertain. Mm-hmm. And I felt that film achieved most of the time at least two at all times, and sometimes maybe even went to three. So that like elevated it that way. But you know, that's not taking away from the other films. I think that 4 is good, but in a different way. I like 6. I even like First Contact, even though I know a lot of people don't. And even the ones that, you know, like Star Trek 3, I don't dislike it. It's just kind of there. You know, it doesn't achieve the same heights as the other ones there, but I wouldn't say it's a bad movie.
Star Trek 3 is always, like, I've always seen it as kind of mediocre, but it has the one sequence where the Enterprise is, like, cruising towards this cloaked bird of prey, and that's one of my favorite sequences in Star Trek. Slightly less so when I realized that the movie was borrowed from, the music was borrowed from Aliens, but when I first saw it, I didn't know what that music was, and it just sounded really cool. We actually have an email that is relevant to this movie conversation, so if you guys don't mind, I am going to read it. This is from one of our listeners, Wayne Basta, and it says, Bob and Oren, I was pleased to hear both of you back together on the last two episodes. I started to worry we might have a podcast host change, and those are never fun. A number of podcasts I've listened to fell apart when a host left. They tried to replace them, but the dynamic made the show fun was lost. I'm in the process of listening to the Star Trek Las Vegas episodes, so I think I'm caught up to the most recent one. I've started watching the SF Debris videos after you guys mentioned your upcoming guests. They are quite entertaining. It has also given me a stroll back through Voyager without, you know, actually having to watch Voyager. Oren is right. It's quite clear the influences these have had on him. During several episodes, I thought it could just be Oren talking because the words are the same. Oh, thanks, Wayne.
That's my favorite part of the email.
All right. A show topic that might be fun for you guys is discussing the movies and looking at them for which ones are good movies versus which ones have good Star Trek themes. You'd have to define what a Star Trek theme is, but I would look at it as showing humanity striving to become better, or something that has a moral message of some kind. To explain what got me thinking about this, Wrath of Khan is hands down the best movie, but the Star Trek plot elements aren't very prevalent. There's the wacky science of Genesis, but the characters are mostly just trying to survive. It's a good character piece, which makes it a great movie, and that is another potential Star Trek theme. Similarly, the JG movie was a good movie, but had even less Star Trek themes. You could also argue wacky science is a hallmark of Trek themes too, which both of these feature. P.S. I feel Bob's receding excitement for Star Trek Online. I was initially fired up by Season 6 and the Star Bases, but they've lost their luster pretty fast. I even complained about that in the blog post today. Thank you, Wayne, for the email.
Thanks, Wayne.
Wayne has been our most loyal fan recently. But with that in mind, Chuck, what did you? I know you've already you did a review of the new movie with Confused Matthew, I think, but it's been a while since I've listened to it, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on Star Trek 2009.
Well, my opinion of Star Trek 2009 is, and I know this might seem like I'm trying to waffle on this, but I don't think it's as bad as the people who hate it is, but I don't think it's as great as everybody else says either. I think that it did a satisfying job of entertaining me, but I felt it was a little too superficial.
That's
so
fair.
It's more of an in the middle opinion.
What did you think about Chris Pine as Kirk?
Yeah, it was all right. I'm sorry, that's not much of a compliment, but that's, I suppose, I mean, you could potentially see a brash, young, unpolished Kirk beneath all of that, sure. But then that's why I think putting him then in the captain's chair permanently at that point is, what the hell's wrong with you?
Yeah.
You know, he could be Kirk someday, maybe, but he ain't there yet.
When I watch the 2013 movie, I'm going to count the number of situations they could have solved with their super long-range subspace transporter. Because I'm positive that they're going to forget they can do that.
Oh, yeah.
Which, speaking of which, what do you think the 2013 movie is going to be about?
Jerry Mitchell.
What?
Nothing.
I've heard that it's probably going to be con-related.
Mm-hmm.
If so,
no, that is
we'll
a
see
rumor.
What
they do. That is false. It is not going to be con related.
Okay.
Well, I mean, at the moment, we don't actually know. The reason why I ask is that, like, you know, we've heard all these things that say it's going to be con, and then we've heard all these things that say it's going to be Gary Mitchell. And at the moment, it's really just anyone's guess, which is why I was asking for Chuck's opinion on that.
I don't actually keep up on what the Star Trek news is. Because, like I say, I want to go in things with a fresh perspective.
Yeah.
So, people have said to me, have you heard about this? What do you think of that? And, no, I don't think anything. I haven't seen it yet.
What is your thought on using cargo containers as a marketing tool?
I don't think he's going to get that reference.
So you probably haven't heard about this then as you're saying, keep up with that part of it. You want to go into things fresh. JJ blocked off his set with big cargo containers. And this caused a huge stir in a bunch of the media, like, oh, there's these cargo containers out here around the set of the new Star Trek movie. Oh, what could be so secret? We're like, really? Come on, guys. Really?
Yeah, there were at least half a dozen articles that were about this wall he'd constructed of cargo containers. It's kind of exhausting to keep up with all the various leaks and articles about the 2013 movie.
Yeah, just let the film come out. Let it stand on its own. You know, it's an incomplete work. An essential element of creativity is that you have to be able to do something without worrying about the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to experiment as an actor, as a director, whatever, just throw something out there and be able to say, "No, that sucks. We'll just forget that happened." You know, that allows greater in the end creativity because what works can be used out there. And so judging, what's going on with your leak scripts or people sneaking onto the set or snapping pictures with their Zoom cameras or whatever, ultimately you're doing the film industry a disservice by making them take less chances.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because it puts them in a situation where it's like, we're being judged on what people think we're going to do instead of what we're actually going to do. So I guess I'll rephrase the question. What are your hopes for the 2013 movie?
Well, my first hope is that it will entertain me. And if it can do two of the other things, that would be great too. Beyond that, I don't have any, expectations. It would be great if it would, create enough of interest in Star Trek in general that we could perhaps fully revitalize the franchise and maybe return it to the small screen. Obviously not as an adaptation of what they're doing with the original crew, but if they could be enough to show, hey, it's about time that we try this again on a weekly basis, even if it's just a limited 12 episode season, like, is happening quite a bit more often.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like a Game of Thrones, for instance, where it doesn't have to be huge. You know, we go for, to put the money on the screen instead of having a whole lot of episodes. We really, try to make it a feature film every week sort of thing. That's kind of my hope, that what we might get out of it beyond, you know, the success of the film, to revitalize this franchise.
I guess while we're on that topic, what would be your dream to see in a new Star Trek show?
Just something that would entertain and make us think. Beyond that, whatever they want to do. You know, I've got no problem if they want to do a prequel, a sequel, if they want to do an anthology. You know, I'm far less concerned with the specifics of it and more the idea of it. I want the creative people out there to really look at this and say, this is what I can bring to this. This is a unique voice I have with this that nevertheless will tie in and enhance Star Trek. I want it to make Star Trek better by its existence instead of detracting from it.
Well said.
At the same, that is both a well thought out and, but at the same time, a tall order. I hope they can live up to it. Assuming they make another one, I want them to make another one.
Though there's rumblings from Robert Orci about, you know, animated Trek. Remember we were talking about that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I remember that. How would you feel about an animated series, Chuck?
I think that would be good. It certainly would give them an opportunity to explore some things that would be limited with a live action show. If it worked out, I mean, it could help break the American mindset away from the idea that animation is either for kids or for comedies. You know, to have the same approach that other countries do, like Japan, that, you know, just because it's animated doesn't mean it can't be a serious drama or a serious science fiction or whatever.
I bet you the next time they show Vulcan in an animated series, it'll have two moons. For anyone who didn't get that reference, in the TOS animated episode, now I'm forgetting what it's called.
Yesteryear.
Yeah, Yesteryear. Which is a pretty good episode, all told, and very important to canon, as Chuck has shown in his latest review. But for some reason, in a background shot, it shows a moon, even though the TOS was very specific that Vulcan does not have a moon. So, you know, there's a little weird canon snafu right there.
There's a tendency among artists to like to draw great big full moons. I think that's why it was there.
Yeah, I mean, it's... It's pretty looking. I'll give him that.
Just to fill in negative space.
There's a who was it? Peter David. That's it. Peter David lamented that in one of his comic books, a key plot element was that the Hulk was stronger during the new moon.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst part of it was is that the artist wouldn't get that. And in fact, in the panel when he said, "At least it's a new moon tonight," that is written over a panel with a huge full moon in it.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
That's
artists just love to draw big full moons.
There's something I don't. Apparently, there's a lot of talk about. Have you read Game of Thrones at all? Going on a little bit of a tangent.
I haven't read it. I've had it on to read list for about 15 years. But.
Apparently, there's a theory among people who really read into the world and like look at how it works that the Game of Thrones world doesn't have a moon, because it's never described as he never describes a moon. And according to these people who have gotten way more into it than I ever have, the tidal like descriptions that he has also would make sense for there not being a moon. Like the tides are supposed to be very mild.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I just thought that was an interesting little tangent.
It certainly is. It was great when the creative forces really think about those kinds of things, as opposed to like a Phantom Menace. You know, you're going through the planet core kind of thing. You know, hey, George, I don't think it works that way.
Why is the planet core filled with water? I mean, I've seen Journey to the Center of the Earth, There was no water down there.
And there's this thing called gravity, see, and if you have about, you know, 1,000 miles of water sitting on top of you, that could probably crush you. I don't care how big of an animal you are, George. You know.
Look, that for anti-gravity fish. You don't even know. They were filled with unobtainium and all sorts of things. All right. So I'm gonna backstep here a little bit because I wanted to talk about First Contact.
Okay.
Particular the how do you feel about Picard's portrayal in this movie, and like how he may or may not be different from the Picard we see on the television show?
Well, certainly once we got into the films, he took a change in direction. Stewart wanted to be more of an action hero, and that certainly is more relevant. I don't think that's limited to First Contact, and I don't think it's really fair to hold it against that, because I think that was the idea in basically all of them.
Yeah.
But as far as his reaction to the Borg, like I covered in the video, I think that if you look at the personal connection between him and that adversary, and the particular threat that they are now facing, I think that Picard's behavior is actually understandable within his character. You may not be seeing the Picard you're used to. You're seeing the Picard who was there that he would not let out because he was a civilized person, the same way that I forget the name of the episode, but O'Brien was mentally stuck in a prison for 20 years.
Yeah, that's and, an episode. I don't remember what it's called either, but I know the one you're talking about.
Right. I don't want to give a spoiler away, but suffice to say he does something that you would say that's not something O'Brien would do, and the whole point of it was under those circumstances, even O'Brien would do something terrible.
Mm-hmm.
That potential is inside all of us if we are driven to that extreme, and what makes us better people is the fact that we don't give in to those things most of the time, that it takes something extreme in order to break down the massive barriers that we have built up that says, I know what's right and I know what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows just how great these threats are, or just how horrible this pain is that one has endured, that can crumble even for a little while. I mean, Picard breaking down for what, maybe half an hour at most, in the face of all that has happened,
mm-hmm.
Shows that he is human and yet still has that, you know, strength to, in the end, accept that, yeah, I'm the asshole here. I shouldn't be doing this. I know better.
Right. And just for reference, we give spoilers on the show all the time. We can't get through an episode without spoiling everything in it.
I don't feel too bad about spoilers for shows that have been on the air for, or that have been off the air for, 15 years. I don't feel too bad about that.
The only problem I had with the O'Brien is stuck in a mine prison episode is that the next week he seemed perfectly fine. And I was expecting him to still be a little scarred from his experience. Normally Deep Space Nine does that very well. And the reason why I tend to examine Picard's behavior in First Contact with more scrutiny than I do with any of the other movies is that First Contact is actually good, and so I care. Whereas when I look at the other movies, I'm like, yeah, Picard's acting a little weird, but everything else in this movie is so bad that I don't care. I don't notice it. That's sort of my... Bob, I've been asking a lot of questions. You have a question you'd like to ask?
I think you should keep on trucking.
You think I should keep... All right, I just, I don't want anyone to make any accusations about how I'm the one who says everything.
I am not going to interrupt your time with your idol. It's cool. He's your rock star.
That's fair.
You want to sign your chest? You can do that.
All right, hold on. I'm gonna go get my e-marker now. All right, so here's another movie-related question that I have. How do you feel about the fact that they blew up the Enterprise in Generations?
It didn't really care, to be honest. I can understand that they probably wanted something a little bit flashier for the movies that they were planning to come afterwards, and I can understand if you're going to get rid of it. I suppose that's a good way to do it, is to you know, have a dramatic exit. And if it would have been actually in a good movie, that might have been good.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that Generations flopped and was, you know, just overall disappointing, you know, it's just kind of one more thing in the episode, or excuse me, in the film.
Yeah. Well, the thing about Generations that always confused me was the part where, like, Data pushes Crusher off the ship and Geordi's like, that wasn't funny. I'm like, yeah, it was. It's like the funniest part of the movie. I was laughing really hard. I don't understand why you wouldn't think that was funny.
We as the audience loved it. I mean, think of the context of the situation, though. Come on, Orin. Come on.
I don't get why, in the context, they didn't think it was funny. I mean, they were pushing people off the boat. They, you know, Worf fell off the boat and it was funny. It's holographic water. It's not like she's going to get sick. I don't know. I thought it was funny.
Bad things happening to Worf is funny. Bad things happening to anyone else is not funny.
Well, it's all fun and games until somebody other than Worf gets hurt.
Speaking of Worf, because Worf is an interesting character. How do you think DS9 would have gone if they hadn't added Worf?
I think the series would have. I think the series would have done just as well creatively. Mm-hmm. Certainly Worf added to it, but I think that if he wasn't there, they would have done something else that would have been just as good. But of course, giving Michael Dorn a paycheck every week, yeah, the guy deserves it. He put up with a lot of crap for 7 years.
He had to wear some pretty extensive makeup too.
Yeah,
although
he did that for 11 years plus the movies.
It always makes me sad when I find out that, like, certain parts about a show that I really liked, the actors that had to do them hated. Like, I find, you know, like, the visor was apparently really uncomfortable for Geordi to wear. And, you know, or for, excuse me, for, am I seriously blanking on the name of Geordi's actor?
LeVar Burton,
yeah, okay. You know, he just, like, it would get painful after a while, and he just really did not like that visor. And it makes me sad, because I really liked the visor as a plot device, and it's the same thing with Brent Spiner and the yellow contacts that he had to wear. Like, I really liked that his eyes were yellow, but it made me sad to find out that that was really uncomfortable for Brent Spiner to have to do.
I'm sure it was. But you don't have to take my word for it.
I do love the, when I first saw Reading Rainbow, I thought it was a holodeck episode of TNG. Because it just came on randomly as I was flipping channels, and I was like, what is Geordi doing here in this, like, I don't know, it's like a restaurant or something, and he doesn't have his visor on. What's going on with that? Speaking of not having characters, in Deep Space Nine, how do you feel about the death of Jadzia Dax?
I was never really crazy about the character of Jadzia, so I wasn't, you know, cheering her death, but the fact that she died didn't much matter to me. I do think that it could have been a little less hokey. At least that was the thing I took away from it. She looked kind of ridiculous at the end, and that's kind of not the way that the character should have exited. Wasn't a Tasha Yar, but it wasn't actually, I can't think of a very good Wrath of Khan. Yeah, it wasn't a Wrath of Khan, but it wasn't a Tasha Yar either.
There's one episode of Deep Space Nine, I can't remember the name of it, but it's the one where Worf and Dax go off on a mission on their own to rescue this Cardassian defector, and, like, Dax is really injured, like, really badly hurt, and there's a question of whether or not she'll make it, and it's pretty close to the point where she actually dies. And I'm looking back, and I'm like, you know, if she had died in that episode, I think it would have worked way better, because it was, like, really emotional and really gripping, and then if she died, it would have been, like, you know, it would have been the big payoff at the end, instead of it being this power that Dukat uses, like, once. He never uses that power again. He shoots her with some kind of weird Parath laser, and then he's done.
It would have certainly been better for the series, but I think it would have been to the detriment of Worf, because that episode was much more about his character and showing that, for all his talk about what is honorable and doing his duty and all of that, in the end, he chose what was personal over that. And that informed us that Worf is more than just all of that, you know, inside of a box thinking. So I can understand what you're saying, but I think that in the end, it was better, at least for him, for her to survive that.
Yeah. And you definitely have to take everything I say about Dax with a grain of salt, because Jadzia Dax is probably my favorite character on Deep Space Nine. So, you know, for whatever reason, I really like her. How do you feel about the character of Ezri Dax?
Yeah, she's there.
Yeah, she is.
She successfully converts oxygen into carbon dioxide and provides a small amount of ballast. That's what's needed.
Is she?
Oh, fantastic!
On the Defiant, is she a comm officer? Is that what her job is?
She's counseling the Defiant as the Defiant rides into battle.
I always figured that for useless people like that, they just have a console that's the equivalent of those little baby toys of the steering wheel and the handle that you give to small children. You know?
That's the only job I can find that is actually something she could be doing is being the comm officer, but it's like, wait a minute.
Hang on, I need to find Photoshop real quick. Hang on.
It's like none of the Daxes have any comm officer experience as far as we know, and Ezri was a counselor. So are they just telling me that anyone can just sit down at the comm officer's station and just do it? Whatever. It's the communication station. How complicated could it possibly be?
But then again, that was Uhura's entire job, you know?
It's
got to be something more to it than just being able to shove anybody in there.
Yeah, that was why it bothered me, was I was like, you know, even though Uhura isn't exactly the most important character on TOS, I always just assumed she was, you know, doing her job behind the scenes and, you know, filtering. Because, like, when you know, dealing with communications in space, you have all these factors that can come into play. So I just sort of assumed it was a job you needed to go to school for and learn. But, maybe not. Speaking of strange characters, let's talk about Tasha Yar for a minute. What are your feelings on the character of Tasha Yar?
I think she had potential that sadly went unexplored, and it's a shame that happened, because if they had given her Denise Crosby a little bit more to keep her interested,
mm-hmm.
I think that in the later years she would have probably had some great opportunities there, some great things to explore with her. I mean, her character comes from such a different background that they could have, you know, explored so much of the darker aspects of life, you know, away from the Federation. It didn't have to be like a Deep Space Nine kind of a thing, but to see, you know, not everybody grew up in paradise. They just didn't know what to really do with her besides have her, you know, stand around and look pretty, which is the reason why she left.
Yeah, that's... Nah. How do you think that would have changed the character of Worf if she'd stayed on the show?
I think that Worf might not have gotten as much screen time, but I think that he might have been more of an O'Brien character, where they would have said, this is a kind of guy that he brings a lot into this, we got to find something to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was kind of the direction they were going with, maybe like an O'Brien plus even, so that maybe he and O'Brien both would have wound up on Deep Space Nine from the beginning.
No, that's a neat idea. Talking about characters that should have been on Deep Space Nine, you've mentioned a couple of times, and as far as I know, this is just something you can learn from reading like the background material on Deep Space Nine. But apparently, Ro Laren was supposed to be the first officer originally.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think? What do you think the show would have been like if they had actually gone with that? If Michelle Forbes had been willing to do it,
I think it probably would have been fairly similar. Kira's background in the Resistance certainly informed some aspects, but again, that's just elements of that character. If it would have been a different character, they would have studied those things differently. It wouldn't have been her time in the Resistance. It would have been her time growing up in those resettlement camps, like in her episode, Ro Laren.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would have changed the show all that much.
Yeah, one of the reasons why I was always happy that they went with Kira was actually because since Ro didn't actually grow up on Bajor, like she probably doesn't actually know that much about it. So it would have been like you wouldn't have had anyone who was actually from Bajor on the show, which I think would have kind of been a loss. Even though I really like Ro Laren as a character.
Well, if Ro was going to be the first officer, she was from Starfleet at that point, so it would have been a Starfleet first officer in there, as opposed to someone from the Bajoran militia.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing.
Of course, you would have had all the Bajorans calling her a poser.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. But that would have been a really good dynamic for that particular character, though, because then she could reconnect with what makes her Bajoran, what her cultural heritage is, all that good stuff. That could have been an interesting thing to pursue, but, you know, it didn't happen, obviously, because Michelle didn't want to be tied down to a series.
When they started coming, like, I had this vain hope that when they started doing more stuff with the Maquis in later Deep Space Nine, that she might show up then. But, you know, obviously that didn't happen, but I really wanted it to.
I'd kind of like to switch gears up a little bit, actually.
Yes?
Away from Star Trek and talk about a little bit other sci-fi out there, if you wouldn't mind, Chuck. You know, what other sci-fi have you actually reviewed on your website? Because we know you have a whole bunch of other stuff that you have on there. Just touch on some of it. You know, what else have you done? What else do you like? What do you hate? Stuff like that. Some of the highlights, if you would.
Firefly, Farscape, Battlestar Galactica, Babylon 5 are all on there. And they're all great programs that I enjoy. Some of them I enjoy reviewing less because they're a little bit... they're a little bit different materially into. Like, Firefly is definitely the hardest to cover because it's a really enjoyable show, but it's hard to analyze. And it's because it's is humorous, it's hard to make fun of. So, you know, I don't have a whole lot to bring to the table as far as that goes, because those are basically my only two tools in my toolbox. so that makes it a little hard. But at the same time, you know, I like... you know, being able to do it because I like watching, you know, a great show. And, you know, having to watch a great show over and over is a lot better than having to watch a crap show over and over again.
I remember when I did my first review of a Firefly episode, I was doing war stories, and I was like, all right, this is going to be a four-page review. It was like 12 pages later. I was like, there's more stuff. I'm not done yet. like everything in that episode is connected together. There's nothing you can leave out.
What about Doctor Who?
Oh, I can't believe I forgot Doctor Who. Doctor Who's a lot of fun to work with. You know, there's so much mythology to the show and so much to explore with that. And, you know, that's a fun show to do as well. You know, there's the hokiness in there that you can have a little bit of fun with, but at the same time, it adds to the flavor. You know, you know, it's like the silly TOS effect sometimes, you know, oh, the ship looks silly, but you're still having fun with it all, you know.
Absolutely.
That kind of thing.
Right. Now, have any of your reviews at all extended beyond the visual media into, like, comic books or novels or anything, or have you considered doing anything like that?
Well, people have suggested novels. I'm really not in favor of that because a novel takes a long time to sit down and read. So there's that element. Plus, in a audiovisual medium like this, it's going to be a lot more difficult because I have nothing to put on the screen, really. And if I wanted to share something out of it, I would have to read it and then talk about it. Whereas at least with the videos, I can put up a clip of the show and have them talk a little bit to give the audience a break from having to listen to me. Because I think that is actually an essential part of it, was if people have to sit down and listen to me for 15 minutes straight, I have to really be interesting for those 15 minutes or they're going to get bored quickly.
Right.
So to shake things up a little bit, putting clips in there helps.
Mm-hmm. Although I did really like, this isn't really a review, but your, I don't know what I would call it, your retexting of the Voyager Splashdown comic.
I forgot about that.
I thought that was hilarious, and frankly, I would love to see you do another one if the mood strikes it. If the mood strikes you,
retexting.
Go ahead.
I took this comic called Splashdown that I got out of the nickel bin, and I scanned it all in there, erased all of the word bubbles, and added my own word bubbles in there instead. There was already a goofy comic in the first place, so just adding a little bit of insanity to it. There's the Janeway two-finger gesture that I absolutely loved. I don't want to give away what it was, plus it's kind of dirty, but...
just a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
The
basic premise of the comic is that, like, Voyager, like, crashes into the water, and, you know, it's a little... I've seen some of the original comic, and it is... pretty goofy, and frankly, I like your retexting better.
Well, I guess on that point, are you reading anything currently that's, you know, Star Trek or sci-fi related that you're really enjoying?
I just started reading Thud, Terry Snuff, Terry Pratchett's latest book, and I just started, so I haven't really formed an opinion yet. I'm sure I'll love it to death. But
is that a Discworld book?
Yeah.
Oh man, I love Discworld. I just finished The Fifth Elephant.
Yep. Snuff is another Vimes story. So.
Oh man, Vimes. Vimes is a really interesting character. I actually came on Vimes at like the end of his arc, or like close to the end, where he's like the captain of the guard, and it's interesting, like, because I didn't feel lost, but at the same time I was like, I want to go back and read the previous Vimes stories and see how he got to this point.
Nightwatch, I think, is my favorite Vimes story that he did. I don't want to give anything away for it, but if those of you who have read it know what I'm talking about. If not, it really provides a great look at Vimes, who he was, and like I was talking about with Picard, shows what happens when you're pushed up against a wall, what could tear down your boundaries and what is not. I will give a small part of the novel away because there's a line in there I really love. That is, for a time, Vimes is in the past and is actually teaching his younger self how to be a watchman. And during this, it involves him chasing a very nasty homicidal maniac. And he comments sometimes that, I want to do something, but I can't because young Vimes is watching me. I don't want him to learn that. And then when he finally catches up with the guy, he has that temptation again, but the line he says is, I want to do it, but I can't because I know young Vimes is watching me from 20 years ago. And I thought that really showed what kind of a person he was, that mm-hmm. even now he realizes that all of that is still a part of who he is as a character, as a person, what makes him who he is, and that he doesn't want to cross that line. As much as it would corrupt his past self, it would corrupt who he is now by taking that action.
I'm going to have to read that book. I haven't read that one.
Trust me, I haven't actually given any spoilers away, but that's the one tiny element of it. And I think it shows Terry Pratchett's brilliance. He's such a funny man. He's such a smart man, and he's such a gifted writer.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
On the topic of sci-fi shows, are there any shows that you haven't reviewed that you'd really like to?
I don't think so. There's not a lot of high quality science fiction television that actually got anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of it unfortunately gets cut short.
What do you think about the new show Defiance is coming out?
I haven't had a chance to learn anything about that, and plus I've been burned so much that I get leery about wanting to get into a show until I know it's going to make at least a full season because of all of the ones that just get cut short,
yeah.
You know, too soon. Get disappointed.
Well, I personally am saving my pennies because I want to get you to review Space 1999. Have you seen that?
I think I did a long time ago.
That show is amazing. My favorite part is when they go to the antimatter planet that's full of parrots. And that's like the second episode. But
so speaking of things that we hate, since we've been talking about a lot about kind of things that we like and whatnot, I figure we go ahead and actually talk about things that we don't like about, you know, Star Trek or sci-fi or so, especially since, Oren, you brought up Space 1999.
Look, I have a special place in my heart for Space 1999.
Everybody has a special place in their heart for Space 1999, Oren. Everybody does. But Chuck, you know, what are some of the things that you like, or excuse me, dislike or hate about Star Trek? They can be characters, episodes, stories, or story arcs, the way Archer's hair is parted. You know, what are some things that you don't like?
Technobabble, I hate. The thing I hate about it is that it achieves nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the antithesis of that whole inform, inspire, entertain thing. It does none of that. It's not even self-consistent. So what's the point? At least if you had some kind of rules in place so that we knew that it actually meant something, okay. But the fact that it is only there to fill time, it really irks me. I hate that element of it. I have no problem with jargon as long as it matters.
So, like, spool up the FTL drives is fine, but, like, you know, shunt the anti-protons into the flux regulator is just, what does that even mean?
We're detecting a highly localized disturbance in the space-time continuum. You know, you don't have to say that. But not to mention the fact that if you're in a crisis, the last thing you want to do is ramble. You know, there's a disturbance. You know,
if
that's all you're saying, what more is there to say? It's in the space-time continuum. Well, thanks for narrowing it down for me. So it's not the square root of -1. Thank you very much.
It's a highly localized. It's not foreign at all. It's very local.
This is a domestic disturbance.
Speaking of that, I would, Chuck, I would love to hear your retelling of the first few episodes of Voyager that you watched. I want to hear that story.
Well, we watched Voyager from the very beginning. We were actually excited about it. We were very much in favor of Janeway.
Mm-hmm.
The first female captain for the series, we were all for that.
Mm-hmm.
Our disappointment wasn't because a female captain threatened us. Our disappointment was that we just felt like they weren't doing anything with this show.
Mm-hmm.
It had potential, but it just wasn't being explored. They were just too interested in playing it safe. That basically was what Voyager's problem was for me. And I think it was the Agony Booth. Summed it up real well. Voyager basically became like a McDonald's sandwich. You knew what you were going to get. It filled you up, but it didn't really do anything for you. You know, that's the kind of thing it was. It was basically a little bit of comfort food, and that's it. Whereas, you know, the other series always seemed to aspire to more. And that was the real disappointment that we had with Voyager.
I mean, frankly, I think anyone who watches your reviews and comes away from it thinking that you didn't like Janeway because she was a female captain just isn't paying attention. I don't think any of us have any problems with Kate Mulgrew or the idea of her being the captain. It just didn't pan out.
I mean, it is ridiculous that people, you know, they say you're threatened by a female captain, you know, as if, you know, you're sitting around here going, you know, I'm feeling very virile today. Wait a minute. There is a fake woman leading a ship that doesn't exist somewhere. How will I ever pick up a woman ever again?
I'll just have this image in my mind forever. All future dates are ruined now.
I understand, you know, there's that old school, you know, your threat, you know, feminism, you're threatened, and that was legitimate, but the idea of taking it now into this, if you're critical, you must be, you know, that's where you are in essence, taking women and saying they're too fragile to criticize. And that's, you know, that may not be what your intention is, but that's what you've unwittingly done. You've made it so that, I can't, you know, mock Captain Janeway because she's a woman. And that, you know, I want to treat her the same way as I treat Picard. I mean, I make Picard out in the videos to be a fraidy cat a lot of the time. You know, not in the face. You know? Whereas Janeway's approach, if you hit her in the face, you know, she'd be like, okay, you'll get your own in the end. May not be today, may not be next week, but yeah, you'll see your own intestines before the end.
Well, Mind Bomb has become something of a meme in my gaming group now.
Oh my goodness! Yes, it is. Oh man!
Whenever we discuss how to defeat like a big boss that we're having to deal with, our first suggestion is always Mind Bomb, which we actually used once, but that's a different story entirely.
Inspiring heights of nerddom. That's what you're doing. That's what you're doing. You keep it up. Keep it up, sir. So you had started watching Voyager, and you quickly became unimpressed with it then.
Yeah, I gave it a season and a half before I just finally gave up on it.
Gotcha. So what was your thought then when they were talking about Enterprise?
That was more of a I've been burned before kind of thing. I really hope that they don't screw it up again. And unfortunately, they did. I think a lot of it was because I think Brennan Braga was burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was still, you know, he had steady work with a great paying job. I don't begrudge the fact that he, you know, as a successful writer wanted to keep doing it. I begrudge the fact that he did a pretty crappy job of it, though. You know, if he wanted to just executive produce and keep the show going in the right direction, that would have been much better. And of course, Rick Berman, I won't even start on that. But, you know, because like, for instance, I pick a lot on Tucker because I'm covering the early episodes there. Those are the ones that they wrote of him.
Yeah.
And the reason why I treat him like a redneck stereotype is because that is what they wrote him as. Mm-hmm. And Connor Trenier, I have absolutely nothing against, because he plays a redneck stereotype because that's what they wrote, and he delivers that. And then when they later on writers would do a good job with him, he does that, and he delivers that. He delivers the emotion that they put in there. He delivers the frustration, the anxiety. He delivers everything. You know, the guy was stuck doing doing that role, but he did the best he could. Whereas, like, for instance, a Jolene Blalock, who got so much attention, seemed like she just didn't have the ability to really deliver on it. And to a different degree, Scott Bakula, because Scott Bakula is such an everyman that he doesn't really fit into the role of a captain who can't be an everyman. You know, even when they were writing him correctly, he comes across more like a throwback to a 1950s science fiction movie, you know, Captain Stump Huge Large or something like that.
That's,
you know,
exactly
where he's,
how my mom described,
you know, he's the big American who comes in there, has all the right things to say, and delivers it in just the right voice. None of the other captains are like that, and not, you know, even Kirk wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kirk may give a speech. Kirk may be American, white, or all of that stuff, but he doesn't come across that same way. So that, you know, I'm nothing against the man as an actor, but it seemed like he wasn't cast quite in the right role for that.
How do you feel about the fourth season of Enterprise when it, like, was handed over to Manny Coto?
You know, I don't want to seem like I'm hating on Enterprise, because I think a lot of people get that sense.
Oh, no, please do. Please do.
But excuse me. You know, because I know a lot of the fans say, hey, season four was when the show got really great. Well, I definitely think it was an improvement. And I can definitely see that they were really trying. And I give them credit for that, because it felt like a lot in seasons one and two. They just did – they were collecting their paychecks, and that was it. I mean the you know, the writers, which was Berman and Braga, basically. You know, I got the sense they were trying. They were just having trouble delivering in the fourth season. They would set up these great ideas, but there wasn't really a payoff to them that merited what they were building up to. But God knows they tried. They did the best they could with what they had.
Now, I've heard some people have said that what they really wanted season four to be was the Earth-Romulan War. Do you think that would have been feasible for them to do in the fourth season?
Fourth, no. I think fifth, that was definitely a possibility. And I'm not sure, though, that one season would be enough. As far as the, you know, the difficulty of it, you know, that ties back in with the whole original idea. Somehow we fought this war, but we never saw the enemy. You know, it either had to be just a tiny little skirmish, or else, you know, it's going to be harder and harder to think of how you could possibly have this happening short of some massive exchange, nuclear annihilation sort of thing.
Well, that was one of the reasons, the things that really confused me about Enterprise, was that when I started watching it, which was basically after it was done airing. Like, I watched one or two episodes when it was actually on, but that was just because my parents are huge Star Trek fans, and at the time I wasn't that into it. But, like, as I was watching it later, I was like, wait a minute. I was kind of expecting this to be much more primitive looking, because they described, you know, in the Balance of Terror, they described them fighting the war with the Romulans with, like, nuclear weapons. So I was expecting, you know, basically submarines in space. Was sort of how I expected it to work, but then they have the view screen, and I'm like, wait a minute, they have a view screen? How did they not ever see the Romulans with a view screen?
Yeah, I mean, that was the
Romulans looked at their caller ID, and they saw it was Starfleet, so they didn't pick up the phone.
I mean, at that point, the only way I could have figured that it could have worked was for the Romulans to deliberately not be showing them, like, not show the Federation what they look like, and have it, you know, have that be like one of their goals, and it would be, I don't know, it would feel a little meta at that point.
Well, I think that it might have been the direction they were going with it, if you recall that connection that was implied between the those hardline Vulcan factions and the Romulans.
Right, yeah, I forgot about
that. That they would deliberately do that for that reason, to make sure that there wasn't any idea of a connection there, that there was possibly a fifth column working against the blossoming Federation.
What about the last episode of Enterprise, These Are the Voyages?
That was the last TNG episode, I thought.
Yeah, that episode is so weird to watch it. It's like, what is Riker and Troy are here? They both seem really tired. Like, everyone seems tired. Like, they don't really know what they're doing.
It was such a big mistake. First off, because Berman and Braga stepped back in and screwed it all up. The characters had grown and developed, and then it felt like somebody threw the Wayback lever, and not in a good way. You know, the mm-hmm. the worst aspects of the series were what the finale was about. Then the whole Riker-Troy thing wasn't the fact that they had that in there, but the fact that they were inserting Riker into all those scenes, so that it was like he was it sort of felt like a Forrest Gump bit, you mm-hmm. know, where, you know, your attention is being drawn to him because he's watching, as opposed to watching the scene itself that you're supposed to be doing. So it was just a massive screw-up all around.
Do you think that was like a contractual thing? Like Berman and Braga had it in their contract that they would get to write the last episode?
Well, I believe they were still executive producers, so they would have the right to do whatever they wanted as far as that goes. If they said, you know, we're going to write it, there was nothing that anybody could do to stop them.
All right, I misunderstood what was going on, because I was always under the impression that in the fourth season what happened was the network executives said, all right, Berman and Braga, you guys can't make this show anymore, and said, all right, Manny Cota, you're the showrunner now. That's what I thought had happened, but that may maybe
what, hmm. what my reading suggested was that they saw what he was bringing into it, and they said, why don't you step up and take the helm for this season? That they passed the baton over to him for the leadership, but I think that they were still in control. I'm not 100% sure, but that's what I think.
Because it just always confused me that they were like, all right, so we recognize that we need a change of writer, so we're giving it to this new guy, but for the last episode, we're going to give it back to the guys who haven't really been making it work. Go ahead.
I know that Brendan Braga said that he likes to write the Wham episodes. He likes to come in and do a Dark Frontier kind of a thing. So I'm sure that, you know, hey, this is the last one. Oh, well, let's come in there and let's end this on a high note, you know, and it, you know, then collective sighs all around, you know. Yes, of course. Brandon, go do that. We're out of here anyway.
It's just so weird, because it's like there's this like 7-year time jump, and I'm not entirely clear on what anyone's relationship is to each other anymore, because it's, you know, it's a long time, and like apparently nothing really seems to have changed, but some things have changed, and I'm not sure if that's just a writing inconsistency, or if that's supposed to have been how their relationships developed in the multi-year time gap. I just don't know.
Yeah, it's the Doctor's Hollow novel is probably more accurate to the reality than that.
Oh man, I love the Doctor's Hollow novel episode, the Starship Vortex. Speaking of on further Enterprise plots, how do you feel about the temporal Cold War?
It's another example of wasted potential. It could have been great, but they didn't know what they were doing with it. Going back to the comic book idea, one of the big mistakes in early 90s comics was everybody realized that if you have a great interesting original villain show up, that draws in readers. So they would constantly throw in these new villains, and then they wouldn't go anywhere because they didn't know anything about them.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of a thing was one of the problems that they had here. You know, they would come up with this idea, we'll have a temporal Cold War and there'll be, you know, this chance for time travel and tying it into the future stuff that we've already done, and the fans will love that. Okay, well, what are you going to do with it? We'll work that out later.
That's a great question.
All right. Well, we are starting to come up against the end of our normal time, but I have a couple more questions that I'm gonna squeeze in here because I don't know when the next time I might have a chance to ask them. So first, I want you to say in your own words how you feel about Seven of Nine as a character.
I love Seven of Nine as a character. I wish to God they would not have put her in the cat suit because it's very hard to say that without being told sexist pig. Understandable. But I think that as a character, she has so much potential, and the only disappointment I have is that they didn't let her evolve enough. They constantly retread the same ground with her because they were afraid of breaking her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had this thing that worked. You know, we don't want to change her too much and have it broken, so they just overdid it. But the character certainly had potential, and she is my favorite in the franchise for that reason. She's so different than the other characters.
All right, and I have one last question. What is your favorite ship?
Any ship.
Borg Cube, I would say. I actually like that.
I love Cube. It's great.
It's great looking. My only concern with it is I would have no idea where there would be a bathroom on that.
Have you ever played Star Trek Bridge Commander?
No.
That is actually a pretty fun game, and you can fly a Borg Cube. It's kind of awkward because like it takes up most of your view screen. You have to zoom the camera really far back. But like attacking a Borg Cube with like a fleet of Federation ships is really fun. Because the Borg Cube will mess you up.
I could imagine.
I got a question for you. That's would you consider doing reviews for things that are outside of popular sci-fi media? For instance, like Machinima, for instance. That's produced by other small-time film producers.
I'm not so sure about that. People have asked me, for instance, to do Star Trek of Gods and Men, which is a very popular fan film.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hesitant to go after things like that I know were done basically by people who are not doing it, who are doing it under such difficult circumstances. Now, I know some people say, well, you did Repo. I think that there comes a certain point where it just isn't sporting to pick apart something like that. Because at the end of the day, the purpose of the show is to have fun and to hopefully maybe explore something with it. I mean, if you can't, fine, but at least if there's nothing in there, then you can pick the hell out of it. But if you can't do that because they were just constrained because of these circumstances, you know, it becomes a little bit, you know, maybe this time could be spent doing something else. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but that's kind of my feeling.
I completely understand.
At some point, I'm going to have to start watching Star Trek Phase 2 because I've heard some interesting things about it. But I did like Of Gods and Men for the most part. And I do have a recommendation for you, Chuck, if you're looking for a sci-fi show that will go on for at least a season. If you haven't seen it already, Alphas is pretty good.
What is it?
Alphas. It's a.
Oh, okay.
It's the new like sci-fi network show. And I watched the first episode and I was not thrilled, but it gets better. It's like it's weird. It's so many television shows that I watch now. They start off really good and then they get worse as the show falls apart. But Alphas starts off with this show that they clearly haven't quite gelled completely. It's like they don't know exactly who's in charge of this organization they're a part of or what exactly their job is, and over the course of the season, it all like solidifies down, and they figure out what they're doing. And of course, it's the showrunner is Ira Stephen Bear, so he knows what he's doing. And they have a couple of different Star Trek cameos, so it's a good show. And it's the first season's on Netflix.
Well, I'll have to check that out sometime.
All right, so I think with that, we're going to wrap this up. Thank you so much, Chuck, for being on our show. It was awesome to have you.
It's great to be here.
And again, for anyone else, assuming if we have any other listeners who haven't already gone and seen SF Debris' opinionated guides, go watch them. You can find them at sfdebris.bliptv.com, I think is the address.
sfdebris.blip.tv or sfdebris.com.
Correct. All right. And with that, this is All Things Trek signing off.